Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 30th. I'm Ray Graff. History on tap again today. We welcome back our pal, Catherine Sheehan, Executive Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian, a native of Troy. Kathy has lectured on local history topics, including Uncle Sam, the Underground Railroad, public health. Today, we'll talk a little about Prohibition to start the show. But if you want to talk about any topic in regional history, give us a call. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. It's Catherine Sheehan. It's history. It's you. It's coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is historian Kathy Sheehan. She is the executive director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian, a native of Troy. Kathy's career at the museum began when she was an intern from the public history program at SUNY Albany. She is the author of a publication entitled Architecture Worth Saving in Rensselaer County, Revisited 50 Years Later. Catherine has lectured on a lot of local topics and has been an advisor for The Gilded Age on HBO. She's appeared on national and international TV. You can often see her giving tours through downtown Troy at Oakwood Cemetery. It's fun to have Kathy Sheehan on this program, and we're going to talk a little bit about some interesting topics today and anything you want to history-related. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Kathy Sheehan, welcome back. Boy, did we have some fun over at your joint.
We did. Thanks, Ray. It's good to see you again. It's nice to be back here in your studio.
I feel more
comfortable
here.
You're in my neck of the woods.
I feel more comfortable here than in a live setting. But we had a great time with the folks from STAIR at the Hart Clewitt. And what a cool museum. I'll tell you, anybody who's interested in history should check this out.
Oh.
Number one, it's in such a great neighborhood.
It really is, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You could just look at the apartment buildings around there and be in awe.
Yeah. When you've got these row of brownstones and big building, and then the music hall, and then Russell Sage College.
And all of it with stories to tell.
Oh,
and
you probably
know most of them.
Yeah, a lot of them. We've got, you know, this is 1,000 stories in the Naked City. You know?
Yeah, so a couple hundred in Troy.
More than a couple hundred.
I think so. The number to call here is 800-348-2551 as we get into our topic today. And you wanted to talk a little bit about Prohibition.
I did. Well, only because you had mentioned it the last time I was here. You did. You said, you know, we should talk about Prohibition next time.
Well, and I can't believe it.
Well, you know, I write these things down because I would never remember that.
Okay.
And I said, all right.
I'll take your word for it.
I was trying to, because we've brought it up a few different times.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I strongly encourage everybody that really wants to hear, read William Kennedy's book, Legs, you know, which just talks so much about the underbelly of Legs Diamond.
Yeah.
And the underbelly during Prohibition in Albany and all that, you know, all the device. It's a great book. And, but I was looking for, a little bit earlier stuff, like the temperance movement, which just goes back like the 1830s and 40s.
I mean,
that didn't start in the 20th century. It just, you know, kind of when we got up to the, 18th Amendment, 1920. I was looking for the Carrie Nation stories. I started digging out who's smashing bars and, and I didn't really see that.
Around here.
Yeah. Now, you know, I hope somebody might find something. So, there's a great thing. So hopefully they will call in and say, my great-great-grandfather got their bar smashed. But, but one of the things I think that was interesting was in a way to try and curb this, and this is definitely as we're getting closer to the end of the 19th century, we have so many different immigrant populations in, all of which have their own favorite beer, as you know.
Right.
Depending on who was it, Stanton's or Fitzgerald's or what was over here. Doblers and not Doblers.
I
know.
I took a course on this once, and now I can't remember the names of them. Yeah.
They'll come back to it. They'll all come back to us. And, rather than eliminate it, what they started to do was sell liquor licenses based on a city's population.
Huh.
So they could kind of control it to some degree. So population city of Troy at that time was about 75,000. They had about 100 saloon licenses. Now, that doesn't mean that there weren't other, you know, things that they were figuring out, some ways to serve alcohol.
Right.
But you actually had these saloon licenses.
Interesting.
That were going on.
It seems like a lot of saloons for 75,000.
Not really.
750 a pop, I mean?
Well, you know, they said there was one on every block.
Yeah. Well,
there
okay.
Were.
All right.
And sometimes there were two and three.
So when all of this ended, that's an interesting time. When Prohibition went into effect, that must have been an amazing time to research.
Yeah, it was. And again, I was trying to kind of find some of the, you know, where were the some of the fun stories. I mean, interesting stories. I found a really cool one about a woman out on the Troy Niskayuna Road. And they actually said, I have to read this verbatim because it was really kind of fun the way they said it. If you ever wanted to, wrong page. You have to read the right page.
Sure.
You know, those who wanted to have free-flowing liquor, just go along the Water Valley Schenectady Road, which, as we all know, of course, is Route 7.
Yep.
And you could get some through any kind of a jitney. They stopped off. So the jitneys that would stop at, you know, like the bus stops, they were trolley stops.
Yeah.
You know, stop 6, stop 7. Mm-hmm. And they were, that's where you just pick up your booze.
Your hooch. Right.
So, but there was a woman that they enacted who had been part of the Niskayuna Prohibition Club or Society. And they wanted her to do a sting operation for them. And so they got a hold of somebody. He was going out to her house. And he said, I'm going to buy you know, some liquor from her. And she said, no, I'm going to buy it from you. So he says, okay, it's going to be $20. And so she's waiting now because she's thinking the police. And one of the things that was interesting was for this whole area, they had a lot of federal prohibition police were scheduled in Troy. They would go up to Saratoga. They'd go down to Hudson. They were all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
So you called these guys. And they would come over. So she's waiting for her. In the meantime, the guy's like, all right, give me my $20, lady. I want to get out of here. And so she writes the check. She writes a check for the $20. And then the police still haven't shown up.
Oh, boy.
And so she runs in there. She goes, just a minute. She runs into her room, changes the shirt on, and puts this big shirt on with a big star that says she was the Prohibition Busters, you know, and she was the you know, bootlegger police.
You know, apart from this was in the newspaper?
Yeah.
So apart from newspapers, how does a historian really get a handle on the scope of the bootlegging? In other words, it's all theoretical, even though it was out in the open a lot, it was under the table. And so, therefore, official statistics are tough apart from arrest statistics.
Right.
How do you research this?
Well, I mean, you could certainly go through and like trying to find out how many licenses they actually did. Those are a matter of public record.
Yeah.
And actually, we have some of those in our collection now.
Yeah.
So, you know, they go past that time where where governmental records they have to carry. So we get them.
Right.
You know, so you can actually just really you count those out. Then you have to start looking. You go from the paper to looking for someone's personal papers. So there was a guy named Bascom who was a prohibitionist running for governor who lived in Troy, and he was out on the circuit. Well, it turns out we actually have his papers at the museum.
Ah.
Yeah. That only just came in 2017. His family was out in California. His descendants were in California, but they knew he was running for governor on the prohibition ticket.
Right.
In the 1890s. And they sent us his papers.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had a place on Hoosick and River Street. And they had lots of big prohibition rallies and things like that. So, you know, you could start doing where you're reading his letters or reading whatever correspondence comes with that. It's really, you know, the old Watergate, they follow the money.
Right.
That's true. Right. Follow the money. So find whatever receipt you can and then start digging from there. So, which is fun. That's, you know, the best part of my job.
We're joined by Catherine Sheehan, Executive Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County Troy City Historian. So when Prohibition was in full swing, there was a great underground economy. And I remember watching a show on Chicago, and there are tunnels that go from some taverns or what were taverns directly to the waterfront where people would get stuff from Canada. How did, in your research, how did this work around here?
That was too much work.
Yeah? They just made
it? That's just too much work. They just came down the road. I mean, it just came down from, they were always getting picked up in Hoosick Falls. They came down through Vermont. You're coming down, you know, from anywhere and from Canada up through here. You're getting picked off on these small roads. That's the rum runners. They were literally taking their cars up.
You had to believe that there was payola involved, and some got through, and some were sacrificial lambs, as it were.
Yeah. Well, that definitely happened in taverns. You know, it's your turn to get slapped.
Yeah.
You're going to go to jail, and then we're going to look the other way because it's the next guy's turn. And that was definitely verbatim. You know, oral history passed down for multiple generations on who got picked off during the during Prohibition. But yeah, no, I think there, when you're looking at why was the Waterfleet, you know, Troy Road, so popular? Why was Route 7? You know, it's easy pickings up to go right up Route 7 up into Vermont.
And there were no unique and innovative ways to sneak through and not use the main roads?
Oh, sure there were. All those back roads.
Yeah. So cool.
Tons of them.
Catherine Sheehan's our guest today from the Hart Clewitt Museum. We'll take a quick break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's history today on Vox Pop. We'll be back. The lockbox is open at WAMC.org. You got to say it. We are doing really well. And when I say we, I mean you. You have been incredibly generous. $484,182 in the lockbox right now. It's all going to count on minute one of the fund drive, which is, by the way, Monday at 6 a.m. If you want to make a pledge now, you're going to shorten the fund drive for sure. It's WAMC.org. Vox Pop today, it's history with Kathy Sheehan from the Hart Clewitt and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. Before we get to the phones and the emails, and by the way, you don't need to ask specifically about Prohibition. This woman is a font of knowledge about a lot of stuff. But while we're on the topic of Prohibition, do you know who the big, you mentioned Legs Diamond.
Right.
And a lot of these gangsters, they made their money. That's, Prohibition had a terrible ancillary effect, the do-gooders who wanted to stop everybody from the devil's brew,
right,
made organized crime really a thing. And you mentioned Legs Diamond, who was over what, in Menands and on that side of the river.
Yeah, he was over, down in Albany. And,
do we know who the big player was on your side of the river?
No, he was over on our side of the river too.
Was he?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah,
making
a lot of money. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it was funny. I found one other thing that was interesting. There was the Albany group of the Prohibition group was meeting up in Round Lake.
Yeah,
the big Round Lake meeting house. And this Mrs. Murley, who was with the Women Christian WCTU, the Women's Christian Temperance Union, 1930, she finally says, under Prohibition, wrote Mrs. Murley, homes are becoming bar rooms and kitchens are becoming speakeasies. This has failed miserably.
So what was her suggestion?
Her suggestion, she goes, we just have to remind you that in this year, there's no glossing over the fact that we have a very sour ferment. I mean, she went on this whole big thing and how this is going to work and that they just need to regulate liquor in a better way instead of just completely eliminating it.
Yeah.
The funny thing is later there is a note that came into, this is to the Knickerbocker News, and it says, Mrs. Murley is not a WCTU member, says the county head.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. She said, your article as the first page of the afternoon edition headed "Change the Dry Law" is the article Mrs. Jenny Murley of Loudonville wrote. She said she is a member of the Loudonville WCTU. I will say there is no Loudonville union, and as far as we can check, she is neither a member or any of the WCTUs of the city of Albany nor of the county, as it is necessary for each member to pay an annual dues and sign the pledge. Everybody had to sign the pledge. And as far as we can check up, Mrs. Murley has done neither this year. So we therefore ask you to give us the name, the same publicity in the next edition of your paper as you have given Mrs. Murley. They gave her front page headings with a photograph and everything.
Interesting.
And that was signed by Mrs. Caroline Lindsay.
So you wonder why the counterfeit? This is someone who just wanted alcohol back?
You have to wonder.
It's
you know, I couldn't find anything much more about her. But I thought, wow, I mean, whole front page, top of the fold, Ray.
Wow, amazing. And the Knickerbocker News, which I still remember.
Yeah, me too.
You know, have you ever given, you give a lot of tours. Are there spots where there is noted activity around Troy where back in the Prohibition days, this was a speakeasy or this was a place where people congregated? Do you show those on tours?
We do some of them. Some of them are not quite, you know, because our walking tours are kind of tend to be in the historic district where you know, where the museum is within about a 7-block radius. A lot of more are either up in the Berg or farther down in South Troy. We certainly talk about it. But, of course, Legs Diamond had his trial at the Retzer County Courthouse, which is half a block away from the museum.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, then he got murdered the next day. That's what happened over on Madison Avenue, right?
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk history with Kathy Sheehan. This email came in at voxpop@wamc.org, and we've talked a little about this before. Are there any records that might list the names of the men who worked on the Hoosac Tunnel? I had a great grand who might have been employed but would like to verify the dates if he did.
That I think that did come up before when they were built. That was in the 1870s when the Hoosac Tunnel over into North Adams.
Yeah.
And of course, unfortunately, several people died when they were building that. That was really quite an engineering feat.
Yeah.
There might be things in the Boston and Maine papers. If they want to email me, like we can do a little digging.
What is your email address as long as we have that topic?
It's K Sheehan, Sheehan, at HARTCLUETT.org.
Okay, so KSheehan@HartCluett.org. All right. 800-348-2551. What better way to start a call-in show than to go to Argyle and talk to our buddy Merle?
Merle.
Hello, Merle. You're on. Or not.
Hello, Merle.
Last time we were talking to Merle, he took a while because he was making a sandwich or something.
I heard that. I was
Merle, on there. Oh, boy.
Come on, Merle.
Well, let's put Merle on hold, and we'll see. Maybe he'll be around.
He comes back.
Another buddy is Joan in Schenectady, and I bet Joan is there. Hello, Joan.
I am here. Oh, it's so delightful to be on the phone with you, Ray.
Welcome.
And Kathy.
Hi, Joan. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing pretty well.
That's
Ray's
good.
Been, like, teasing me the last couple of weeks because my phone was on the blink. He had Rick Orlando on. He had all these people I wanted to talk to. I kept going from my phone going,
Okay.
but here I am.
All right. Well, it sounds fine now. Go ahead.
It's good. It's all good. I want to know about Prohibition and any of my ancestors. My very French-Canadian ancestry comes by way of Canada, and I imagine through Cahos,
yes,
and then into Lansingburg.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather then married his Irish Catholic wife out of Ireland. And
okay.
I'm just thinking neither the French nor the Irish were fond of any sort of prohibition.
No, that's for sure.
Anything interesting? Let's see, my paternal name is Terrien, Therrien. And just wondering if there's any ancestry in the historical news.
Well, it's a good point that you bring up. Certainly, there was kind of almost this kind of anti-Catholic movement going on a little bit at that time, or at least was perceived that way. And they, you know, of course, Catholics drink wine and mass and things like that. And you could actually get, which is an interesting point too, you could buy liquor. You know, you could get liquor, a prescription from your doctor for certain things if they need
that script myself.
Right. You get a script, right. You write a script for, you know, a doctor would write you a script for things like that. You could get church wine, which had a lower alcohol level to it. So there was all these different rules that did apply. But I mean, one of the more prominent Catholics was Al Smith, who was running for governor, and he was completely, you know, against prohibition. He ends up, of course, losing to Herbert Hoover. But, you know, he really wanted to eliminate that. And he said it was being unfair to Catholics. And I'm not sure if it's apocryphal. It certainly has been around for a long time. St. Joseph's Church down in South Troy, the one that was run by the Jesuits. And during Prohibition, they were really upset because they said, you know, we'd rather have somebody be a little tipsy and be in church than to be hungover and miserable and stay home.
Yeah.
You know, it's a double-edged sword. But, you know, your family's interested. They probably came to the French church just below Washington Park in Troy, as many of the French Canadians did. Yeah.
Why would you make that assumption?
Because it was the only one that was there for a long time. St. Jean's Church was the French Canadian church.
Okay.
Yeah. And so many of the people, even though they settled in Cohoes, they're working in the Harmony Mills, which was a big, textile manufacturing up on North Mohawk Street. They would come over to Troy. They'd take the trolley over to Troy and go to Saint Jean de Baptiste.
Oh. Yeah. Well, Joan, you want to wrap it up here or are you good?
No, I think I'm good and I'll see you next week, my friend.
Are you going to be at the fun drive?
You betcha.
All right. We'll see you then, Joan. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next week. Oh, yeah, the fun drive is a lot of fun.
Fun drive is a lot of fun.
I know that you want to come, too.
I do.
Do you really?
I do. Yeah.
We probably won't let you leave the building today until you sign up.
I will sign up today.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's History with Kathy Sheehan from the Hart Clewitt Museum. And we started out talking a little bit about Prohibition today, but what have you been thinking about and working on at the office?
So we're working on our next exhibition, Ray, and it's going to be The Peoples of Rensselaer County, and this is for our America 250.
Yeah.
And we are literally looking at everybody from Native American all the way on everybody through to the present. So to that end, actually, I'll do a shameless plug. We're going to have a kind of an oral history day. Really what the story is what did you bring? What did people bring with them?
From
whence they came.
Yes.
And what story is that? Why is that one piece so iconic for families to hang on to it for maybe multiple generations?
What are you learning?
You're going to learn why.
What are you learning?
That's what I want to find out in the process is, you know, why did they come to Rensselaer County? Why did they come and still, was it the farmlands where they wanted to be farmers out in, you know, Brunswick and Pittstown, and or were they coming because they worked on the Erie Canal in the 1820s and stayed?
So how do people find out about this?
So they come to our webpage, go to our webpage at hartclewitt.org, and it's going to be October 11th, I think that's coming.
You're
up
cheating. You're looking
I know
at your
I am.
Device.
I'm looking at my
Come
device.
On.
I'm looking at my device. I know because I forgot to write it down. So it's October 11th. We're doing it from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. And it's kind of a community collect.
Cool.
We're hoping to let people let us borrow those objects. You've seen our exhibit spaces. They'd be very safely exhibited for this exhibition, which will open next year in March.
It's such a great place. Have you? And one of the things I look back on the event that we did, when was it, last month?
Yeah, it was a month ago already. Well,
okay.
Yeah.
Was that piece of art by the artist, and I forget his name, from the Rensselaer side of the river, but he also was in the gallery in Albany, and I forget the guy's name. But did you ever do an exhibition about some of the arts in Rensselaer County and in Troy over the years. Over the decade.
Oh, several times. Yeah. We do it. We have Joseph Hidley from out in Sand Lake. And oh, my gosh. Now my brain goes blank. We have got William Richardson Tyler, who's Hudson River School, one of the Hudson less. Probably one of the little lesser known of the Hudson River School artists, not like Frederick Church.
Yeah.
You know, we had Olana and things, but still, he's important. Yeah, when you were all sitting in the front parlor pre-screening, you were standing right in front of beautiful landscapes.
Artwork, yeah.
Yeah, really interesting artwork.
And, of course, the architecture over there. I mean, just at the cemetery alone, it's crazy how interesting it all is. Let's go back to the phones. Kathy Sheehan's our guest today. It's History, 800-348-2551. Drea is in Troy. Drea, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I just have a comment about prohibition, and it's all the women who are fighting to get prohibition came from a place where many women whose partners, husbands, were alcoholics, and alcoholism was a big problem then. They didn't have 12-step programs. They didn't have any kind of welfare where if your husband drank up all the pay, you couldn't find somewhere to live and all that kind of stuff. So it was a much bigger problem for women at that time than it is now, and everybody knows that it's still a problem for women.
Right.
So I just wanted to put that in there. Not everybody who was for temperance was some crazy axe-wielding woman.
Right, like Carrie Nation. Right. No, I think you're absolutely right, Drea. And it's interesting because when you look at things like, again, talking about how do we find this information, well, you look at things like orphanages, where, a husband, for like you said, may have had an alcohol problem and either left or was maybe arrested or even worse. Sometimes the mother would have to put the children in the orphanage because she had to go back to work and couldn't take care of her children. And you see this in the registers, which is, it's really sad. And unfortunately happened quite frequently. The Troy Orphan Asylum has a lot of those records.
Huh.
Yeah. And the unfortunate problem with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And on the other side of things, my grandfather and his Sicilian brothers had an illegal still in Poughkeepsie, which spectacularly burnt down during Prohibition.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really
both
interesting.
Both sides of the story.
Thanks for a great call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Kathy Sheehan is here from the Hart Clewitt Museum. And any projects in the Rensselaer County side of things that in a broader scope that you're working on right now?
Yeah, we're also, of course, again, everybody's doing America 250. So we're working with Saratoga and Albany and on the Henry Knox Trail.
Okay.
Yeah,
and we've talked about that.
Cannons. Yeah, so, right, the cannons, the noble train of artillery that came down. So that's going to start mid-December. And our event, when he crossed from Albany into what is now, which was Bath-on-Hudson, but now it's the city of Rensselaer, we're going to be at Cralo State Historic Site.
Oh, cool.
In the afternoon on January 3rd. And so we're going to have the cannon shooting off, and there's a linstock, which is what they lit the cannons with. There's going to be a ceremonially passing.
You're going to blow off some cannons?
Yeah. We're going to blow off cannons.
Yeah. You know, when we've talked about Henry Knox before, you mentioned that he was very young, right?
He was 25 years old.
Now, I swear to you, and maybe I was half asleep or whatever, but I was watching a history show about that, and they portrayed him as being much older.
I know.
And I said, Kathy Sheehan said he wasn't that old. My wife said, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Yeah. He was a young man. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, George Washington, $1,000. Take this from Ticonderoga to Dorchester Heights.
That's so cool. I love talking history with Kathy Sheehan. We're going to take a break here and we'll get back to the calls. 800-348-2551. Any regional history topic is fair game. We'll be back. Thank you. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Ray Graff with you, and it's history today with Kathy Sheehan from the Hart Clewitt Museum. 800-348-2551. That's the number. VoxPop@WAMC.org. That's the email address if you want to talk history. And let's go to Troy once again. Paul, you're on.
Good afternoon. The late, great Maureen Stapleton and her wonderful memoir, Hell of a Life, talked about, as a little girl, walking by the Rensselaer County Courthouse when Legs Diamond was being escorted out. And she mistook him for an uncle of hers and ran up and hugged him. And he sort of patted her on the head and said, "Aren't you a nice girl?" Well, my late wonderful mother was a legal secretary, and she was in the courthouse at that same time, at that same moment, after he was escorted out and, I guess, brought to Albany.
Wow.
That's a great story. I have heard that so many times, and it's interesting. I'm glad you brought up Maureen Stapleton. You know, tomorrow, another great organization, WMHT, is doing a whole film on Maureen's life. They're interviewing her daughter and her son.
Wow.
I'm actually interviewed in that one, as well as a couple of other real Maureen Stapleton fans in the area, Bill Carey. And so it's going to be, I think it airs at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. So if you're a Maureen Stapleton fan.
I had the privilege of meeting her a few years back, and I also attended the wonderful tribute to her at Hudson Valley a couple years ago.
Yes, we did that. That was a lot of fun. She was such an interesting person, and really, you talk about how a story is and what kind of connections that we have to our objects. And you know, we have several things in our collection now, and some of her letters and a dress that she wore for one of her awards shows. And, you know, you hold these things and you realize, oh, my gosh, look at the people that she worked with.
Well, I remember an exhibit you folks had a few years ago, and you had her Academy Award there. And it was at the museum. I forget how many years ago.
I think
ago.
It's still
Lee
there.
John was involved in
it's
a presentation.
One. Yeah, we did. 2012, we did that exhibit. We had her Emmy, her Oscar, her Golden Globe, Tony Awards. What I loved was the letters that she had from Helen Hayes and President Reagan sent her letters, and Elizabeth Taylor. And
it's all in her book. In her book. I recommend it. A Hell of a Life, Maureen Stapleton. A wonderful woman and a great, great actress. Yeah. Thank
Paul,
you.
Thanks a lot, Paul. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org. Here's a funny email from Jim in Colony. Speaking of Prohibition and Vox Pop is the subject heading.
Uh-oh.
Just wanted to share this fun full circle moment. Speaking of Prohibition, my grandfather, John J. Oliver, was one of the first New Yorkers to obtain a beer license after Prohibition was repealed. His business, distributing Hedrick beer in and around the Albany area, gave birth to the beer shop that still stands today, Oliver's Beverage, on Colvin Avenue.
Oh, wow.
Which
That's
I have frequented
great.
More than once over the decades. Full circle moment, says Jim. His son, my uncle, also named John Oliver, is an author and has been a guest on Vox Pop in recent years.
Huh.
And he is a classic. Let me tell you something. JPV Oliver, he goes by. His book.
JPV, what's his book on?
Oh, it's a memoir.
Oh,
but
okay.
Maybe it's an epigraph. I don't know what you'd call it.
Yeah.
But it's little vignettes from his life, and it is hilarious. Well, that's an interesting one, and thanks for that,
Jim. Oh, I love that.
800-348-2551. That's our telephone number here on Vox Pop. Kathy Sheehan's our guest. This email from Alicia. Mame Fahey and the Red Light District. I understand there was a thriving Red Light District at the base of the stairs to RPI. A lady named Mame Fahey was the madam. Yay or nay?
Yeah, oh, very much so. Mary Alice Fahey, a.k.a. Mame Faye.
Yeah.
I actually heard the married name was Bonter. Yeah, she was the queen. So the line, the Red Line, ran along what is 6th Avenue now, and that's where the train was.
Yeah.
This is where I want to go crazy when everybody associates Mame Faye with Belle Watling from Gone with the Wind. And yeah, I know.
Oh, wow.
Because she had a million. She was sitting on a million. The woman invested her money. She made a lot of money at the expense of her girls.
Right.
As we know what they are all doing.
Right.
And she was literally a block away from the police station, from Central Station.
Wow.
Yeah, there's an apartment house there now. And she had this brownstones. But so everybody's like, oh, she was so benevolent and everything. She wasn't. She really was not benevolent. And again, I think as now we're able to get a hold of other kind of past newspapers, you see how many times was she arrested, and that her disorderly house. And she wasn't the only madam in Troy. There were several of them. She just happened to be the most famous. And the other thing is a little bit of a myth is that everybody says all the World War II veterans coming in on the troop trains all hopped off the train and frequented all these houses of ill repute near the station. It was right near the train station. Well, if it was anything, it was more the World War I soldiers that were done. By the time World War II, there was this young DA named Wiley who was out to make a name for himself, trying to get on Roosevelt's good side and get in as Kevin. And he was cleaning up all the vice.
I'll be darned.
That was going to happen in Troy.
All the vice he knew about.
All the vice he knew about, right.
Interesting.
And so they bumped it. They got rid of her. But yeah, she's legit. It's a legit character. Yes, it's right at the kind of the foot of the approach on 6th Avenue and Broadway and 6th. We have a brick. You talk about, here's an iconic object. They were tearing down, her house was torn down during urban renewal. But the foundations were there. And when they were building the new apartment building, I'm going to work and I actually see the exposed basement. So I ran into the workman. I said, can I have one of those bricks over there?
Oh.
And they're looking at, lady, what is, you know,
what's
like,
your problem?
This crazy room, what are you doing? So when I told them, then they're like, oh, that's really cool. So we have two.
That's amazing.
Two bricks from Mame Faye's house.
Don't you feel blessed to some extent that when you walk the streets of Troy, you see a different time. You can overlay. Yeah. It's like having those smart goggles, and you can overlay something that was 100 years ago.
It's true, yeah. Especially standing over there, you know, there were landslides, and there was the Prohibition things going on, and the train coming through. It was a noisy, busy city. You know, in the 1920s, every 14 minutes, a train came into the city of Troy. That's astounding.
That's a lot. Yeah.
I
wish there were more trains today.
Oh, me too.
You just got off a train.
I did.
Good for you.
I did. And again, what's really fun, we were up all the way up in the Cascades of, you know, north of Seattle.
I love it.
Going up. It was wonderful. Yeah. It was a great trip. And we're in this little town called Cashmere. And in this wonderful little museum, the docent is standing. He goes, so where are you from? My friend Barbara Urban and I are on the train trip. And Troy, New York. He goes, huh. He goes, my sister-in-law lives in Hoosick Falls.
It's a small world.
It's a really small
world. Isn't that amazing? Kathy Sheehan is our guest today from the Hart Clewitt Museum. She is the Rensselaer County and Troy City historian. The number is 800-348-2551. As we talk history, Paul is in Providence, New York. Paul, you're on.
This is Don.
Don. All right. Well, I don't know how that's a typo because it says Paul. I'll call you Paul. No, Don, you're on. Go ahead.
Don, where is Providence, New York?
It's next to Galway in Sarasota.
Oh, Galway. Okay. Okay.
Go ahead. You're on.
Miles from Sacramento.
All right. Now I know you're rare.
So, my grandfather was a bootlegger, and he owned a farm in Southern Albany County, and he drove the car up to suitcases, and him and my grandmother would travel to New York City to sell the bootleg. And
looked
like two travelers going down the road.
Interesting. So you're a little tough to hear. Maybe you're on speakerphone, but as I understand it, your grandfather had a place in Southern Albany County and bootlegged and then drove down to New York City looking like normal folks and selling
travelers.
It. Amazing. Right. Yeah.
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 There's some fun stories about how people would retrofit their cars and trunks and put like false bottoms in. They would take the cushioning out of the back seats so they could fit more liquor in the back seats and try to get past, you know, if there was any kind of a stop. And there was one person, it was actually down in the Catskills, and his car was so weighted down that it collapsed.
Oh my gosh.
It basically collapsed on what is now Route 9.
Huh?
He was on 9H or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wow. That's a great call. Yeah.
Do you have any relics of that era, Paul?
Don.
Oh, Don. No. Don. That's right.
I don't. Another thing I'd like to ask your guest about, if he knows of William Koenig.
William.
He had a machine shop on Berry Street in the 1940s through the 1960s.
William Koenig had a machine shop on Ferry Street between the 40s and the 60s.
Yeah, there was one. There was a machine shop on Ferry Street. It was just as you're kind of heading up the hill a little bit, kind of between 6th and 7th Avenue on the other side of the near where the railroad tracks were, actually. Yeah.
All right, Paul, Don, we're having a heck of a time hearing you, my friend. We're going to have to let you go here, but thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. This email came in to voxpop@wamc.org. Denise in Hudson writes, "We live in an old 1862 house in Hudson where one of the original owners were the Evans family of Evans Ale fame. Apparently they were quite wealthy till they lost all their money during Prohibition." So yeah. That's the other side of it.
That's the other side of it. Yeah, the Stoll's Brewery over in Troy was one that really got hit. You know, you have to remember, not only Troy, we're fighting World War One, you're fighting the Germans. It was a German brewery. They were constantly being hammered by the feds.
Yeah,
and they never survived it.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, Roger writes in from Utica. Utica Club lists on packaging they were the first beer sold after Prohibition.
After Prohibition, yes.
You think it's true or just?
Yeah, no, I think that's probably true. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of Utica Clubs in my time. You ever hear that Utica Club song?
That with Schultz and Dooley.
Ba-ba-ba-ba, ba-ba-ba-ba, Utica Club.
Yeah.
Let's go to Lauren and Troy. Lauren, you're on.
Noon. I was calling because I'm third generation Trojan, and my husband comes from Albany and knows a bit about Henry Hudson and the buildings over there, but we were recently walking on the overlook at Prospect Park where the Troy sign is.
Yep.
And we were just having a sit down, and along come two Mormon kids on mission. And we stood there and we got chatting, and naturally we started talking about Troy history. And we just went into so many different things. Especially me, my grandmother and great-grandmother worked in the collar factories. And the kids just looked at us wide-eyed, and they said they were from Colorado and Utah. And they said, how did you learn all of this? We looked at each other and said, you know, in school and just living. I mean, just living in Troy, you know, having the generations, you hear all kinds of stories, you know. Yeah. So I just thought it was interesting how you come along, and then some people just don't even get into the local history like we do. I always just thought that was natural in Troy. Everybody told stories,
right?
You know,
I know it's, and of course I grew up with that myself, being multiple generations here as well. But you know, one of the things that's interesting, one of the things at the bicentennial, we're talking about America 250 a lot. One of the things that came out of the bicentennial in 76 was teaching local history at the fourth grade level, teaching New York State history, so kids are getting more of that local history, really learning about things like, you know, the Erie Canal and the Underground Railroad, and you know, even things like Uncle Sam and the industries that were going on. And so, you know, a lot of what we do, you know, Anna Doran's our education director, and she, now it's hard for school buses, you know, they have a lot of money to come to the school, so we go to them.
Oh,
so,
do you
yeah,
really?
Yeah, so we take boxes of, you know, just take a box of a few objects and things, and you know, they'll pick a topic that we want to talk about, and we go to school. So it is, hopefully that is getting out, and that's why we like to do lots of walking tours and things, and offering them for family tours too, so that, you know, the younger ones pick that up. We even have a historians in training program that we've done at various times where, you know, kids will come in and they'll pick an object from the collection, and we teach them how to do research on it, and then they create an exhibit.
I love that.
Which is fun.
Lauren, before I let you go, why, now you said you're third generation Trojan, why do you stay?
Yes,
What makes you stay?
What makes me what?
What makes you stay in Troy?
In fact, I taught French, and I lived on and off in France over the years. I love Troy. I love the diversity of Troy. I love the river. We have the best riverfront. My grandmother's stories about sledding down Spring Avenue, how they would only get two runs a night because it was so long to climb back up, or how you could just, you could quit your job and get a new job in the afternoon. You know, you could quit in the morning and get a new job. Or how my grandparents met on the trolley in Troy. I mean, just, there's so much history, and I'm just attached to the place. I love it.
Oh,
thank you for that call.
That's a great call.
Yeah. How many generations are you?
Oh, my gosh. I have ancestors. My paternal grandparents go back to the 1760s.
Really? In Troy?
In Sand Lake. In Sand Lake.
Oh, right around
and,
there.
And Crooked Lake. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
And, you know, we talk about an object. So I just actually, we have a letter, and I wrote a thing to our members about that. I said, what is a piece? I have my great-great-grandmother's rocking chair that I sat on my grandmother's lap when I was a kid.
Amazing.
It was a house. I grew up. I have the chair now. I've told my kids, my granddaughters, and this is how, you know, the stories are what, that's what holds on to things. You know, there is an object, but the object is the catalyst for the story.
So your first ancestors who were on that side of the river, you said West Sand Lake, 1780s? 1760s.
Yeah, pre-revolution.
Have you ever, you're a historian, you must have gone to the site where they lived.
Oh, gosh, many times.
Yeah? Did you dig? Did you find anything?
No, I can't do that. Okay. It's a private home. Well, actually, I just found out who owns the house. So.
Is the house still there?
Yeah.
Like the original house?
Yeah, the farmhouse is still there.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, no, the barn burned down across the street, but the house is still there. Yeah.
So were you able to walk through and check it out?
No, I'm going to. I just found that out. I've been to there's a little small cemetery plot off a thing that we've been to, but yeah.
And your family members are in the plot?
Yeah.
Oh, that is crazy.
Yeah.
I can see why you became a historian. I mean, just that, having those roots so close to where you are right now.
It's so cool. Yeah.
Now, you know, it's always great having you on this show.
Oh, thanks, Ray. I always love doing it.
We still have a little time left, so let's talk about your plan for the future of the Hart Clewitt Museum in 26 and beyond.
Yeah, so 2026, we're our big push, and we're coming up on our 100th anniversary.
That's
in 2027.
Incredible.
100 years.
How old is that house?
Oh, well, 200 for the house. Yes, so our Hart Clewitt house, which was built in 1827, is coming up on its bicentennial.
Amazing.
200 years of wonderful 27-room Federal-style townhouse that we do tours of, so you can come and see that. Designed by a New York City architect, Martin Townsend, Thompson.
Beautiful house.
And, great house. And then the building next door, which is also his other townhouse, this has our research gallery and our research library, and our exhibition galleries, and that's where we'll be doing. Oh, we have a new exhibit opening this Friday on textiles. Yes, and right where we were doing our program when we had it. We have a brand new exhibit. We have these two wonderful artists that came in, and they are responding to pieces in our collection with their own work. So we have contemporary pieces going right up next to our historic pieces. And we actually
quilts
have
quilts and whatnot.
Quilts, yep. It's all about quilts. Yeah.
You know, Josh Landes, I believe, did a piece about something similar in, I want to say, Pittsfield, but I'm not sure, somewhere in the Berkshires where they're doing a very similar thing.
Yep. It opens Friday night. Come and see us Friday. It's the opening of the exhibit. So
it's very exciting. So, I mean, next year is going to be all about the 250th of America.
Right.
What other things would you like to do after that year, after next year?
Oh, I have to finish that book that you keep advertising.
I thought you finished it.
No, I haven't finished it yet. It's all the photographs are done. I'm working on it. And I'm determined that that is going to be for sale for our big anniversary. So I have stacks of things at home because I have to work on that when I'm not doing other things. So it's got to get done.
When are you going to let Amy Halloran curate a bakery
We're going to do a beer and brewing exhibit, actually. Too.
Oh, really?
That's going to open next March in that same meeting room. And we are going to talk a lot about grains. So because that was a huge crop. I mean,
she knows a few things about grains.
Yeah. Oh no, I've already hooked her in.
Yeah, she's cuckoo.
So that's going to open in March.
You know, why don't you? Do you have a brewer who is going to brew something historical?
Oh yeah, we've got the more than one in Troy, but he's right on River Street. The And they have the one at Hoosier Falls.
I don't drink over there.
I don't drink beer either. But it's
I didn't say I didn't drink beer. I just don't drink beer over there.
And next week too is we've got the Seneca Chief is coming.
No way.
So people, the canal boat. Yes, they're coming. They've left Buffalo, and they will be down here on the 17th. So people should come to the dock right in Troy, right behind Dinosaur Barbecue, and at the Green Island Bridge.
Yeah.
And you can take a tour of the Seneca Chief. We're going to be, you know, taking the wedding of the waters. You know, you all remember they took water from all the spots and then poured it. Well, everybody's getting water put in. They're going to plant a tree.
Cool.
At the park, and then it's going to head down to New York City.
Well, listen, this is great, and it's always great to have you, and we're going to, of course. Are you on again this year?
I think so, yeah. I think I'm on in December, maybe, or November, something like that. Yeah.
You'd know better than I. But yeah. I'll tell you what, we'll get you booked for next year. We'll have a lot of fun talking. Yeah. Kathy Sheehan, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Ray.
Support comes from Chesterwood, the historic home, studio, and gardens of sculptor Daniel Chester French, presenting Modeling Women, the female models and sculptors of Chesterwood through October 31st, chesterwood.org. And Foresight Land Services, for over 50 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York, foresightland.com. And, you know, if you'd like to be an underwriter, it's a great thing to do. And you can do it by calling the station at 800-323-9262, or you can go to you can email underwriting@wamc.org. We would love to have you on if you are a socially conscious and someone who cares about us and cares about your bottom line. It's underwriting@wamc.org. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Bowen. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we welcome back virologist Eric Yeager from Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. We'll tell you how bad cold and flu season is going to be. See you at 2:00.